You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
Well, it's getting to that stage of the year where we have a look at the halfway mark. Some of the big numbers that have really defined the first half of this year as June nears a close. 1.9 million, that's the global COVID deaths from January to June, already higher than 2020's toll. 57%, that's the percentage of American adults who've been fully vaccinated against less than 4% here in South Africa, and 5,000%, well, that's the surge, not in frustration, although it could be, in response to level 4 adjusted lockdown. That's the surge in the price of Dogecoin this year so far. Markets today, well, we started in the red, and it was pretty volatile through the course of the day. We ended down just over 400 points at 65,809 points on the All Share. Preston Nerensami, who's a portfolio manager at Nedbank Private Wealth, and Carolyn Kremen, portfolio manager at Advice Works, have your market view on a day, Preston, where, sum it up for me, it was all about locally, that announcement by the president last night.
Good evening, Michael, to both you, your listeners, and Caroline as well. Yeah, definitely, Michael, you know, it was a very volatile day. You know, my initial sense coming into the day was that you know, the markets were kind of looked through everything, vaccine still on its way, this is a short 14-day period, although, you know, the Delta strain is quite a severe strain. I thought the market would look through it, but not so, Michael. You know, our market looks like they're taking the strain a lot more seriously, and, you know, we literally got smashed today. You know, hospitality sector came under massive pressure, the likes of Sogo Sun, both, you know, gaming, hotels, Sun International, City Lodge, you know, all of those counters were down, you know, between 5 to 10%. Our property sector got smashed, especially our property counters with retail mall exposure, the likes of High Prop, Bukile, and the like. And then, you know, even our discretionary retailers, Michael, Fushini, Truett, you know, all coming under massive pressure. So it looks like, you know, just a red day across the board on our local market.
Yeah, a red day across the board, I think, about sums it up. And I'm not surprised the property counters, Preston, were as severely impacted as they were. Just walking around Rosebank earlier today, I for a moment forgot that even sit-down coffee shops were closed. Wanted to just grab a coffee and open up my laptop and do a bit of work on the run. And I couldn't do that. And the place was like some dystopian nightmare, being patrolled by Uber Eats drivers and security guards and no one else in sight. Carolyn, that is the feeling, I think, for many small businesses, particularly in the hospitality and retail trade at the moment.
Yeah, look, I think they were on their last legs, so many of them. You know, it was the first lockdown, the issues with Eskom, and didn't the fact that people really haven't run back to restaurants as one would expect it. So I'm actually very surprised about the market reaction today that it was as extreme, because we knew around the middle of last week that there were stronger restrictions coming. So it really shouldn't have been a surprise. I think the surprise for me up until this point this year is how strong the property market actually has been.
Yeah.
You know, which is completely counterintuitive and frankly not quite logical. So I think we're going to, you know, we've got unemployment figures coming out. I don't think they're going to be a reflection of what we're going to see, you know, in the third quarter, because, you know, this is really going to push so many of those small coffee shops that you like, those small franchises, just really out the business, because their margins are never high, and their rents are not, you know, there's no rent relief. They're just not going to exist anymore. I'll be very surprised now.
And perhaps, Preston, to bring you back in on this point, perhaps the market taking a look at a 14-day lockdown and the government's response and saying we're likely to get an extension, considering that if you project the numbers out by 2 weeks, it's unlikely, looking at the trend, that the numbers are going to be any better when we sit down for our family lecture, because it's not a family meeting. We can't ask questions. It's certainly a lecture by the president who tells us how bad we've been and not obeying the various non-pharmaceutical interventions. But I can't see the lockdown ending in 2 weeks' time. Perhaps the market's saying this could be the whole of July.
Yeah, I share your sentiments and thoughts there, Michael. You know, just reading today, looking at the likes of Israel, you know, where, you know, they've got most of the population vaccinated, and yet people, individuals are still picking up the strain. And if you look at, you know, the emerging market economies, we are way behind with vaccinations, and South Africa within that emerging market pot, we're even lagging our emerging market peers. So, you know, I think maybe we've taken this strain a little bit too lightly, and maybe we haven't reacted as swiftly as we should have, given what we've seen out of India and the likes. And we've got a long way to go, Michael. And I can't see this just being a 14-day. Kind of level 4 lockdown. I think there's probably more pressure to come.
Let's move on to some other interesting corporate news today. A story broken by the excellent Duncan McLeod of Tech Central, along the lines that EOH is continuing its cleanup. And we know Stephen Van Coller has been really ruthless about restoring the reputation, the very badly damaged reputation of this IT company. The founder, Asher Bobot, is being sued for 1.7 billion rand. Gian Mackay, King, the other director. And I recall at the time when Gian Mackay was trading and only alerting shareholders via SENS several weeks after the fact, and I bemoaned on the show why the JSE wasn't moving. It's great to see, Carolyn, that the sword of accountability is going to fall eventually.
I hope so, and I really, I feel very personally vested in this, because when I was working at a certain bank, they used to come in and chat to us often, various members of EOH's management team, and we questioned them about, and this is before everything went awry, we questioned them about governance and the government contracts that they have, and, you know, you're aware that everything's fine. So the fact that somebody is actually going to hold them accountable, if they knew or if they didn't know, it makes absolutely no difference. They had a fiduciary duty to their shareholders. I have clients who had shares in the company in lieu of their retirement funds. It's wiped people out. And let's be fair, these guys are still very wealthy. So you might not get your billions, but, you know, they need to feel the impact.
And symbolically, Preston, this sends out all the right messages about recalibrating the ethical frameworks of corporate South Africa. And Stephen Van Coller, if you look at what the spokesman is quoted as saying in this article on Tech Central, saying that EOH is being very careful about who it chooses to pursue so that it doesn't squander shareholder resources on extensive litigation. They must feel that they've got a pretty sound case.
Yeah, I agree there, you know, Michael. I mean, it's been two hectic years of grinding and cleaning out all of these gremlins in the closet for Stephen Van Coller and the team. But yeah, I think it's a real eye opener. We tend to always focus on, you know, corruption within government here in South Africa. So a real eye opener. But you know, with that being said, you know, although there's a lot being put into this, Michael, you know, there's also been a lot of criticism, which hasn't been, you know, good for Stephen and the team. And from an operational perspective, it's probably been very difficult for the business, even if you look at their recent, you know, trading updates, you know, a few months back, having to deal with all of this and then having to focus on the business and growth. So it's a difficult one, and, you know, but, you know, kudos for them for what they are doing. And I hope that this trend of what we're seeing eventually filters into other corporates and management teams, and, you know, this starts to become the way we, you know, run business here in South Africa in general.
Operationally, I tend to agree with you, Preston. I think a company like EOH couldn't have had more of a tailwind than what we saw during COVID. Everyone overnight had to become an expert in working offsite on Teams, became very familiar with the cloud and all of those technologies that IT companies try and sell. And it is a time and a period where a company like EOH WOH should really be excelling. That hasn't come through operationally, but quite clearly a lot of legacy issues still to clean up there. Speaking, Preston, about legacy issues, coal is being confined in some quarters to a legacy issue. And we see that, you know, with the listing of Thungela coal, everyone questioned when it fell on the first day whether or not this is the end of coal. But it tends to forget that emerging markets still have coal in their energy mix until 2050 at least. And these assets have to find a home somewhere. And we see Anglo exiting to Glencore. And Glencore, no stranger to controversy, saying we'll quite happily take on some of the environmental risks because when we talk about ESG, there's a big social and governance S and G in that acronym. And that's where it feels it can add value.
Yeah, you know, so, you know, Glencore looking at this deal and looking at it from more of a risk-reward perspective, Michael, and then, you know, this deal actually works well for Glencore, Anglo's, and BHP. So for BHP and Anglo's, they're probably looking at this from an ESG perspective, portfolio optimization, cleaning up, you know, their book. I mean, it's a small contributor to their book. And, you know, this asset has been hurt by social unrest, you know, in Colombia. So, you know, really benefiting, you know, all parties. And, you know, the thermal coal, the contribution to Glencore, it's about, you know, 10 to 20% of their profits, you know, depending on what spot price you look at. But, yeah, it just seems that Glencore is committed to running these mines for the next 30 years or so, and with a commitment to reduce emissions over time. So although, you know, it's the most polluting fuel, Michael, if you look at it, you know, there's like you mentioned, emerging markets, there's probably a lot of runway still here. But from an ESG perspective, the likes of Anglo's and BHP, looking at it from that perspective and choosing to get this off the table and pass it on to Glencore to handle the business.
Yeah, I suppose you can also look at it through the perspective and the lens of rather in the hands of a big listed commodities trader and player like Glencore, which has the balance sheet and perhaps expertise to deliver on those promises, then selling off to smaller players who might not be as firm on the G, the governance issues around post-mine rehabilitation and closure and those kinds of things. Still enough to divide markets, but we've seen what Thungela's price has done, and Glencore up just over 90% year to date tells you all you need to know about what investors feel about Glencore with its oil and coal assets. Invicta, Carolyn, if you look at this one, for a long time has had issues with the tax man, but coming right since the appointment of Stephen Joffe as CEO from ENX, and a nice 60-cent dividend was that in these results, not too bad.
Yes, it was a nice dividend. My personal wish is, you know, they have the opportunity in this environment to forego the dividend. You know, people will forgive them in the environment that they're currently operating in. And I really wish they'd actually done that until the restructuring and the strategy change was complete. You know, again, kudos to them for the steps that they have taken. They're certainly moving in the right direction. They're trading better. The mining agricultural revenue was down, but at least they're in profit. But nobody faults the company at this point where we are in this environment for skipping a dividend. And I'd rather not hear that they sold a company, you know, to improve their balance sheet and then pay a dividend rather than fix the company. But that's maybe just my
short-termism. Yes, I hear what you're saying there, Carolyn, about short-termism in this environment. Carolyn Kremen, Portfolio Manager at AdviceWorks, and Preston Narayanasamy, Portfolio Manager at Nedbank Private Wealth, with your Monday View.